My name is Galen Hadlett. I'm here to talk about a project I've been working on, educational program, privacy-focused computing curriculum for teens. First, we're going to talk about who I am, why I'm doing this, and then I thought I would cover the last 10 years of computer science education, which is really when computer science education started to pick up, is in the last 10 years. And then I'm going to talk about like what's missing from the typical like K-12 computer science education program. And then I'm going to talk more about my privacy and digital infrastructure curriculum. And then we can have time for questions. So who am I? I'm Galen Hadlett. I run a nonprofit here in New York City called Sunset Spark. It's a community-based nonprofit. We're in the Sunset Park neighborhood of Brooklyn, which is like a sort of working class immigrant family, historically, neighborhood. So my nonprofit was founded to work with immigrant families doing creative technology. I've been doing computer science education since 2008 on like a volunteer basis, and really 2012 is sort of like a serious thing, and then 2015 I think was when it became my full-time job. I've taught over like 18,000 kids. I taught around 4,000 kids last year in engineering residencies in elementary schools. So typically I teach like robotics and creative technology. I've been involved with things like HOPE and the maker movement for a very long time, EFF since like high school. I very much came to this from like a hacker mentality. And that's sort of my background. I also design curricula for the New York City Department of Education. They have a computer science for all movement, which we'll talk about in a moment. So I design elementary school education materials for them. If you have a child in New York City public school, in elementary school, chances are, if they're learning computer science, it's something that I may have taught or trained someone on to do. That brings me to this. A lot of this is New York City focused because that's where I'm based, but this curriculum that I'm writing is very much supposed to be a nationwide curriculum. We'll get into that in a moment. So the recent history of computer science education. Computer science education really started to pick up around like 2013, 2014. That's when organizations like CS4All and Code.org started to come into existence. We can see here, we have Mayor de Blasio at the time. He didn't actually create the computer science program in New York City or fund it or mandate it. It came from Mayor Bloomberg, who preceded him, but he sort of took the reins of it. And so this is from 2014. You can see over in to the left over there, the right side of the screen, Chicago also started a computer science for all movement around this time. I would say like Boston, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, Michigan as a state, but really Detroit, sort of, and parts of Southern California really started to pick up on computer science education movements, programs at this time, especially in elementary school, middle school, high school. Prior to this, it was much more hacker-based, where people were, you know, coming up with their own programs. Teachers would come up with their own programs. Volunteers would come up with their own programs and sort of push into schools or do after-school activities. And then around 2014 is when it really became like an official thing, where people started talking about computer science teacher certification, computer science curriculum at the state level. And so that's really the recent history of computer science education. And in New York City, computer science education is overseen by the Office of Post-Secondary Readiness, which is just a fancy way of saying like a jobs program. So they're very concerned with jobs and careers. And it typically is promoted as a jobs pipeline for the tech industry. I don't like the word pipeline. We're not like moving kids around. We're not like sending them down a path. Pipelines to me, when I think pipelines, I think How to Blow Up a Pipeline, which is a book around very inspiring to me in my own work here. We might talk about that a little bit later. But I don't like the word pipeline, and I don't think of my programs as jobs programs, or my curricula as something setting someone up for a job. Though there's a slight bit of activism in this curriculum because I am trying to create privacy professionals and public interest technologists. New York City Education Blueprint, I'm bringing this up because it was one of the first real computer science standards in the United States. New York City was one of the forerunners in this, and so a lot of the stuff around the country is based off of the stuff New York City or people in New York City were doing at the time. And privacy is included in this blueprint, which becomes the standards for New York State, which can also get used in other states, because the people, it's a very small group of people who work in computer science education at that level. So oftentimes the people working in New York State will consult for other states on their standards. Anyway, the privacy and trust is included in these standards from an early level. You can see here trust, where they talk about security, privacy, and consent and trust. But when it's taught in a curriculum, it's very much at a cursory level. It's often about, like, even at the middle school and high school level, it's like, maybe you shouldn't share your passwords and you should log into your computer. They're not really talking about, like, who do you trust with your data and should we trust companies. It's very cursory and surface level. Infrastructure, which is also a major component of this curriculum, is also put into the standards. And we can see here where it talks about physical internet. And infrastructure is, again, something that's not really taught. It's not what I'm going to call, like, the sexy or the hot thing about computer science education. No one wants to talk about, you know, digging ditches and putting wires in them and running wires across the country. Even though they talk about pipelines, they don't want to talk about the actual internet pipeline. No one's talking about undersea cables or really, like, data centers and interconnectedness and stuff like that in these curricula. So it's a very overlooked and sort of untouched topic in most. Even though it's included in standards around the country, it's overlooked and untouched in most curricula at every level, elementary, middle, and high school. Who funds computer science education? This is very important. I show code.org here because it's not that big in New York City, but it's a nationwide organization that has a very huge reach, especially across America. Here are some recent stats from them. They've taught 92 million students. They have connections in all 50 states. There's millions of teachers who use code.org as their primary source of computer science education. Who funds code.org? Amazon, Google, Microsoft, the various former CEOs of these companies. So all of these organizations, so organizations like code.org are very much captured by big tech and funders. Here's some more from code.org. They're major partners now, not just the people who fund it, the people they work with to develop their curricula and proof their curricula and expand their curricula. Cisco, makers of internet hardware that may or may not be backdoored. Amazon, Atlassian, which is very much like the corporate, like, we want everyone to do agile development and get a job. Facebook, the big data destroyers. Facebook, Google, Microsoft. Uber's in there. I still don't get Uber, but they're tracking all of our rides if you use Uber. I've never been in an Uber. Anyway, so computer science education is largely captured, even when it's done by a foundation. So there's foundations in New York City, like Robinhood or the Siegel family is often the funder. But when you look at who funds them, it's the same group of people. It's very much, computer science education is very much captured by these companies and the ideas of these companies, which is why, in my opinion, we don't see strong curricula around these topics, around privacy, that addresses it in a substantial way. And so what's in my curricula that we're working at my organization? It's very much a social studies plus computer science curricula. And so it looks at the history of digital infrastructure. So we teach kids what digital infrastructure is. If you haven't heard the term before, digital infrastructure is everything from, like, the wires that, you know, run underground or run undersea. It's the 4G and 5G towers that you see on buildings. It's also, like, our ability to do, like, tap to pay. Apps are also part of our digital infrastructure. PayPal is part of our digital infrastructure. So digital infrastructure encompasses a lot. PlayStation Network, Xbox Live are considered part of our digital infrastructure, which is very important to teens who take these classes. We also talk about the laws governing digital infrastructure and communication. So students learn about FCC, FTC, net neutrality, COPPA, FERPA, SEPA. SEPA is the law that sort of governs, like, if you're, like, a library or a school, what you have to block. We cover HIPAA a little bit, depending on my audience for that. And then we also look at recent events in cybersecurity, privacy, and government and corporate whistleblowing. And I'll talk about that a little bit more. More topics that we cover. Oh, I mentioned this. So we've got just general infrastructure, the laws, various agencies. So we look at everything from the FCC, which is relatively benign, although depending on the administration, is certainly a captured organization, to the NSA. We look at whistleblowers and contemporary news stories. We look at stories and reports about like app data collection and data brokers. Students look at the operating system data collection that's done on their phone and read white papers about that. White papers by many of the presenters at HOPE here who put out that kind of information. And then they look at commercial data breaches and tools to examine commercial data breaches, which is always fun to do when kids are looking up like people's passwords, like have I been pwned and those types of things, and getting to see people's passwords and what people use as passwords is a very fun activity for kids. The general lesson structure of this curricula, we start by framing it as a worldwide problem. Digital infrastructure is a global thing, and it's not just one country that has a problem with their digital infrastructure and privacy. Every country has a problem between corporations and the government working together to invade privacy. And every lesson has, I try to keep the lessons in a way that has something about infrastructure, something about the government, and how it affects the students, and a way for them to regain control. I don't want to create or put on the kids a sort of like privatist or privacy fatalism where they're like, there's nothing I can do about my privacy. Like, my information's out there, there's nothing that can be done. So why don't I just completely submit myself to it? Like, I want them to, every lesson to have a takeaway on what they can do personally to sort of safeguard a little bit of their privacy, or what the trade-offs are if they decide not to. I'm sure all of us do the same thing when we're thinking about like what kind of blockers and VPNs and things like that do I want to run on my computers, and how it can make the internet sort of an aggravating experience sometimes when you are too private. The lessons in here have different pathways. And so I slice up the lessons, or when I design a curricula, and this goes for all the curricula that I've designed for the DOE as well, I make them big enough so that teachers have to choose what's important to them and what's interesting to them. I don't want to give a single pathway through it. And so in this privacy digital infrastructure one, it's very much packed, so there's different pathways in there. You couldn't possibly teach all the lessons as written, just it would take the entire year, probably. But you can carve out the pieces that are interesting to you. So there's sort of a careerist pathway for the jobs pipeline people, where it focuses on civic and privacy related careers and are there a future for computer scientists, like if you want to get into a civic or privacy related career. There's more transgressive pathways where one of the core pathways in this was Edward Snowden a hero or a traitor, where we look at it's been 10 years, 11 years, I think at this point, since Snowden released those documents. And there's been lots of write-ups on it. So students review the white papers, a lot of that stuff that has been put out by like EFF. And they get to decide on their own, was Snowden a hero or a traitor for revealing what these agencies do? That's a very much more like mature pathway for this. There's also the muckraker pathway, where students are very frustrated with their technology at school. They go to a website and it blocks various things. It blocks, like in DOE, they block DuckDuckGo. For some reason, you have to use Google as a search engine. And there's no real reason for that. And so when I taught this this past semester, we looked up the CSIO. We didn't have time to actually contact them, because this was just a beta test run of the course. But we looked up the CSIO and started the chief information security officer for the DOE, who is the person who puts in place the blocking rules on the New York City DOE internet and is responsible for a lot of the software that runs on the computers that blocks things. And so the students, now that they know the laws, they can write and sort of make a request like, why are these things blocked if they are not legally required to be blocked. Is that a position that you take? Is that a position the city takes? Is that a position the DOE takes? And so that's sort of the muckraker policy, where they're just sort of like causing a bit of a ruckus with public servants within the school system. And there's other pathways too. These are just the ones I think speak to the HOPE audience. Types of activities in there. Middle school students, we'll go over social studies standards in a moment, but a lot of it is looking at like government agencies or like the UN and how they work together and how different agencies work together. And so part of that is looking at white papers. So the students in this, they look at white papers put out by various privacy groups and by government agencies and learn how to read them and at the very least read the headlines, read the bullet points and get an understanding of it as sort of a research project. And so they learn a bit about like how to read a terms of service and the school policies and how to survey students and staff to kind of put together their own white paper. Another activity that I'm still working on now, it's still in test, but it's a coding with cryptography activity. There's a tool called the MicroBit that's a very cool, like simple microcontroller that you basically plug in. And it's like it runs kind of like a flash drive on the computer where you can dump code onto it from a block coding editor, like Make Code or Scratch. And so you can export code to it and it runs stuff. And it has a Bluetooth wire, but there's no cryptography module for it. And it runs JavaScript and MicroPython. So I've been working on a module that can be used as an extension that can be easily imported, easily coded for like simple block coding things. So students can learn a bit about end-to-end encryption and how it works and ways to break it and ways that like, just ways to think and talk about cryptography using actual cryptographic methods on a microcontroller. And that activity would be more for like a hands-on teacher who really is into the computer science and the coding side of this. Another activity, I mentioned this before, creating research-style posters on digital infrastructure. So on this, the students look at like the data centers in their city or in their state and different apps and news stories and sort of like how it all relates. And they build these research-style posters that they can then, sort of like a science board, but a research board, where they can do peer-to-peer learning and teach about like digital infrastructure and privacy so that they can sort of speak to their peers about it and their parents and their school staff. Another core of the curriculum is giving simple tips for regaining their control. I mentioned this earlier. Utilizing tools and tips to strengthen personal privacy. So this is where students learn about like DNS-based tools like blockers and custom DNS servers, VPNs. I've actually surprised that in my middle school classes, I primarily teach elementary school, but I also teach middle school. When I ask my middle school students about VPNs, I'm surprised that many of them do know them. A lot of them, their parents use VPNs for watching sports games. So I work in a very international community. And so there are students who are watching sports games from all over the world, soccer, cricket, and using VPNs to do it so they can log into the different localities and watch videos. Also, de-Googlifying their phone, like what does that look like? How does that feel like to use that? And then having them, kids are very into, as you all can understand, making tutorial videos or making videos. So is this a way of sharing their learning? They make their own videos about setting up a VPN on their phone or setting up a DNS tool on their phone and let other students watch them to learn as well. So why middle school? Part of it is I think high school is too packed, at least in New York City. They're very concerned about things like Regents and AP exams. And trying to squeeze in something like a digital infrastructure class is sort of, a lot is already packed into high school. And so I don't know if it's a good place. They have a lot of things they're trying to get students ready for. And so middle school is sort of, I don't want to call it a free ball. Kids learn in middle school or learn again, so there's less emphasis. They try to make it a bit more fun in middle school. Also, I think in middle school, especially in like seventh and eighth grade, kids are very much, they have that like that youthful teen angst where they're ready to like take on the man. And so I think it's a good place to to sort of address this and get kids thinking about privacy at an early age. Outside of that, there's also these also the standards. It's a good place to align with the standards. So there's hard to reach or easy to ignore computer science standards, and a lot of the middle school teachers like to kind of like push the limits of what they're doing with students. And so I think that a curriculum that's focusing on other parts of computer science that aren't coding, it would be of interest to middle school teachers. It's also a contemporary approach to many of the social studies standards. We're going to go over the social studies standards in a moment, but they talk a lot about government agencies and privacy and stuff like that. And so there's a lot of social studies goals that can be attained through these through this curriculum. So here's the New York City scope and sequence. Scope and sequence is like the standards and the order they're supposed to be taught in education. So this is the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade social studies standards and sequence. Actually, these are just the standards, not the sequence of it. And I've kind of highlighted a lot of them here. But in this, you're looking at the functions and characteristics of various government systems. That includes things like the FCC and FTC. You're also looking at individual rights and responsibilities. I think that ties in directly into privacy and what kind of rights and responsibilities individuals have to maintain their privacy. It also looks at origins, uses, and abuses of power. I don't think anyone has really ever looked at that in terms of like a modern context like the NSA and PRISM and tactics like that. So I think this is a very novel approach to these standards. And this is as young as 6th grade where they're learning about that. In 7th grade, they learn more about civics ideals and practices, freedom and rights. Again, privacy fits very well into that. Civic participation and engagement, that's where we get into these white papers where they're engaging their schools, the school system's security information officer and making requests there and surveying the school staff. So they're very engaged there. Also, I mentioned this as a global approach when we look at the digital infrastructure and it's worldwide. So they're looking at countries all around the world and how privacy and secure and data privacy is not being managed well there, and sort of the work between government and corporations is taking away our privacy. In 8th grade, they look more at economic systems. This is where it gets into things like the FTC that regulate like the data that companies can collect on you and how they can use that data, and the sort of economic systems around big tech. And that's where I think data brokers and data collection really comes into play for 8th grade. So there's a lot of places where this integrates well. These are just the New York City standards for social studies. And again, New York City standards aren't the same as other states and countries or states and cities. But I think that there's a lot of overlap within social studies for this across the country. Here are the New York State computer science standards to show how this aligns with, these ideas align with the computer science standards. And again, just because something is a standard doesn't mean that the schools actually teach it. There's lots of things that aren't taught. Standards are easy to ignore. As an example, like describe the trade-offs of implementing specific security safeguards, which could be seen as like, do I run a VPN or not as a cybersecurity safeguard? But again, oftentimes this boils down to don't share passwords, don't share accounts, make sure you log out of your account. It's very surface level how they really describe this. And I think part of that is just because cryptography is hard. It's hard to explain, it's hard to describe. It's hard to teach at a college level, let alone a middle school level. But my curriculum is working towards easy ways to do this, like I mentioned with a simple coding extension for things like the MicroBit. Computer science integration into social studies is built in, but it's currently unexplored. So here are the standards for the state standards for upper middle school, seventh and eighth grade. And it looks at evaluating impacts of laws and regulations on the development of computing, of the use of computing technologies and information. Again, a lot of this is looking at laws, and it's completely unmet. No one is in my review, in my work in the computer science movement in New York City, no one is really teaching about the laws that govern the internet. And I do think that that is partially on purpose, but partially on accident. Again, we have career paths down here, but typically they're not talking about privacy and public interest technology there. Identify and discuss the issues related to collection and use of public and private data. All of these are computer science standards, but they are making calls out to something that would really fall under social studies. In my classes, I collected data on the students. We did a little survey to see how students feel about this. This is a very small sample size. This was only 16 students that I got to do the survey, but I thought it would still be interesting to go over. So here is students versus corporations, government, and schools based on how much they understand about the data that's collected about them. And it's pretty much the same across the board, whether it's corporates, government, or school. They all kind of feel like they know a little bit about what's being collected, but not really. Very few. In the school side, there's a few students who felt they had a strong understanding of it. But for the most part, kids are like, I have a little bit of understanding about what data is being collected about me, which shows me that there's a lot of room to teach kids about what data is being collected about them. When we went over security breaches, seeing all the data that comes out in a security breach, it was really eye-opening to the students, seeing that kind of data out there. We also looked at how concerned are you about how corporation, government, and schools use the data they collect about you. On corporations, it was very skewed towards, like, concerned. Again, this is a very small sample set, but there's some concern in there. Interestingly enough, they seem to be slightly less concerned about schools and what schools are doing with their data, even though in the classroom, they were very interested in contacting people in the school to figure out where their data goes and what is being tracked on them. And here is how do students feel about managing their online privacy? This is actually reassuring because it feels like they said that they could that they trust themselves to make the right decision, which I think is good because it shows that they have this faith in themselves. Like if they had the tools, they could make the right decision, which really puts faith in me that this is a good place to teach students about privacy so they can take these actions on their own. And this speaks to the tips that are built into the curriculum around like things they can do in their on their own devices to manage their privacy. Here are some sample materials of the lessons. The curriculum isn't ready yet for public release, but it will be ready by the end of the summer. I have a sign-up form at the end if anyone wants to get more information on this. So here's some sample materials around digital infrastructure. So we show students digital infrastructure is the hardware and software that enable digital services. And we pick digital services that they would be familiar with, like Netflix, PlayStation Network, TikTok, Tap to Pay, Google Cloud, I think that's WhatsApp. And so they kind of get a sense of what digital services are there. We also teach about ISPs and what an ISP is. And we, you know, survey the class on what ISP they use and their sort of download speeds that they get for their ISP. We look at undersea cables. Again, I'm working with a very like sort of local but international audience of kids with families around the world. So we look up what the pathways are, what the undersea cables are that connect different countries, which is very fun for students to do and get an idea of how the internet is actually connected and what countries are connected to which countries through cables. We also look at data centers. and data centers running cloud services. And then here in New York City, I have a map of the data centers. And so we look at data centers in New York and where they are and where they're located at. And then we look them up on Google Earth and Google Map, or on maps, and take and see the, what the buildings look like. We also look at white papers in there. So now that they knew what an ISP was, and they also, I didn't show this part, but they learned what the FTC is. We looked at the FTC asking ISPs about what kind of data they collected. And the FTC put out a report, a look at what ISPs know about you. And so students went through here, and it's a long report, and it's asking a lot for middle school students to read the whole thing, but we looked at the bullet points and a few paragraphs here and there, and looked at what the sort of results of this were to see what the government thought about these ISPs. And that basically nothing is really being done about it other than a few fines. The curriculum goals for this, we want to meet current education standards. Again, I mentioned that a lot of them aren't being met, so part of this is just to meet the education standards. I also want to reverse privacy fatalism, where students just feel like, you know, my data's out there, what am I going to do? Like, there's nothing I can do. I want to use TikTok. I want to play Pokemon Go. Like, my data has to go out into the world if I want to do that. And again, that's partially true, but there's little practices you can take to regain some control. And letting students know that, so that they don't just feel like it's a foregone conclusion that they will never have privacy, is one of the goals of this curriculum. And I want to inspire a new generation of privacy advocates and public interest technologists who will sort of take up the mantle in organizations like EFF, and hopefully, you know, in 15 years be going to HOPE conferences and doing talks. The curriculum, I thought it'd be released by now, but I still have a few things I have to touch up on it. But it'll be out by the fall of 2024. And there's eight core lessons. I don't really want to call them lessons, because each lesson is really like three lessons. I mentioned I pack things in there because I want people to carve them up in the way they see fit. I'm very much not a prescriptivist in terms of education. I want people to look at materials and look at a collection of resources and decide what is important to them. And I'm just giving them different ways to view it and to teach it, and sort of giving them the scaffolding to teach it in the classroom. And we're going to be doing free online professional development for educators starting in the fall, so that they can learn about these and follow along in the classroom. Any questions? Yes. Yes. I have a 10-year-old who starts sixth grade next year as well.
Yeah, it's exciting.
So the question was, to summarize this, how much of free speech is imbued into the curriculum so that students are learning about, like, concepts about free speech? Is that good?
And censorship
tech-resistant technology, or censorship. Yeah, censorship, I don't know if that's the right word. Circumvention tech. Censorship, circumvention tech. Is that right? Okay. Yes. So I am working with Calix Institute on this. They are actually funding they have funded part of this. They are also my neighbors in my office building, which is just a coincidence. They're going to be reviewing a lot of this and giving feedback on what is missing. But free speech is definitely a thing that is important to me. And I think a lot of this is going to come through news stories. Yet I have to follow up with them. They have a lot about, like, hardware makers who build the back doors or build, like, the firewalls for doing the censorship. And so the free speech aspect is definitely something that's going to be in there. I will make a note after this to make sure to not minimize it. I have no interest in minimizing anything. Like, I'm very much a free speech person. And so I think a lot of this is going to come out through the news stories that are included to talk about it. Like, I think sometimes talking about free speech in the abstract is difficult because people don't feel like they don't have free speech. It's when you show like, actually this was blocked and you can't look up this and this has been censored. That's like when you see the news stories and the reports is where the free speech angle really comes in. So I will make sure that we have news stories in there about that. But I know that a lot of the hardware side of things, like when in the part of the unit where we're teaching about like routers and switches and stuff like that, we talk about like the makers of these, how they put backdoors in and they do this stuff. So that is part of it. Yes. Yeah, that there's actually a place where this goes and there's actual wires that make this work. Yes, so to summarize, you are a college professor in Toronto and you teach first year students or college age students. And a lot of this is the same stuff that you're teaching them about, which I think is, and I'll get to my comment in a moment. A lot of this is what you're teaching them about. And you're seeing that students are also, you know, feeling the need to be more private and taking themselves off of social media and services like that. I have talked, I work with a community college here in New York City, BMCC. And so I do some work with them. I have some interns from them actually right now doing artwork with me. Yes, I think what's interesting about computer science is oftentimes, like if you read the scope and sequence in the standards, as a college professor, you'll be like, this is what we're supposed to be teaching them in undergrad. And you're trying to teach like elementary school students about like protocols and stuff like that. So I think that the computer science standards are very lofty in what they think they're going to teach students. And so like there are students who are learning like college level stuff, but let's be honest, they're probably going to forget a lot of it, but they remember some of it, or they remember the experience of learning it, which is, I think, probably the most important part. Not that they remember everything, but they remember that it was something that they did once. But no, I haven't talked to professors about this. I think that that actually is part of like in New York City, I mentioned the post-secondary readiness. So they do talk to colleges about getting students prepared for this, but it's, if students went through an actual computer science course, they probably wouldn't know about undersea cables. Like I said, they don't. That is the infrastructure side, as I pointed out, is like something that's completely lost in the actual curriculum. And I'm really hoping to like capture that market with this curriculum. Like I'm very concerned. I talked about like the big tech influence in this, in computer science education. And I'm worried that someone like Google or Microsoft or OpenAI will be like, we're going to be funding the digital infrastructure and privacy curricula that is used nationwide. And so we're working with Calix to try to like get ahead of that and capture that market so that like we can have the first say on like what is privacy and what is acceptable free speech and stuff like that. I don't know if that answered your question. Yes. Yeah, I think that is a difficult situation. Like I work with the professional development for CS for All in the elementary capacity, and an elementary school is a very different way of reaching teachers and how teachers work. And it's very much like self-identifying teachers who are like, I'm the tech teacher. I want to learn this computer science. There's very few teachers who aren't like tech savvy who get into it for the most part. I think that the social studies side of this is really what is going to be the push. Like I've been talking with social studies teachers and they seem very interested about the social studies aspect of this and figuring out new ways to do it. And in middle school, it's very much like short unit based where they're doing units that are sort of self-contained and they're moving through things. So I think the teachers will be excited about something that's a new social studies unit that is a bit third rail-ish in aspect of like touching things that maybe shouldn't be talked about, at least in New York City. And I'm gonna try to leverage like the networks we have to like get this out in front of more people across the US, which is definitely gonna be a tricky proposition. I'm looking at the National Social Studies Conference. There's a social studies conference in Boston in November that I think I'm gonna be going to and talking with people there about this. So we have an approach to to try to promote this to teachers who are not the typical self-selecting teachers. Yeah, that's interesting. I haven't gotten to the reading list part of the curriculum yet. Like this sort of beta version, I'm going to bring to my contacts at the middle school level and try to workshop it with some teachers. But I like that aspect. I had a graphic novel, I forget what it's called, that basically is the story of Kevin Mitnick. And so I was going to put, I had that earmarked as something to put into the reading list. But yeah, WYSIWYG, yeah, that's what I thought it was, but I wasn't sure if it was WYSIWYG. Definitely social studies and lit teachers usually work together. Like the class that I was teaching in was a lit teacher who was teaching social studies. And so she taught social studies and lit to students that they were reading. At the time, they had just finished reading The Odyssey. And they were learning about like early democracies and stuff like that. And so it's definitely a good overlap there. And I definitely have that in mind of having like, this is going to be packed with resources, whether it be videos, links to white papers, and books to bring in those resources and get people's attention. Yes. Are any of these materials available now, and how are they licensed? You mean like the curriculum? It is not available now. I haven't released it yet to the public. It will be released, and it's free Creative Commons. Or like that's how I release all my stuff. Regret it. Well, not all my stuff. Some of my stuff is not released. I build a lot of my work is in like creative technology, and I build like lots of robots. So I do not release that publicly because I just started seeing people using it who have a lot more money and a lot more funding than me. And I'm like, maybe I don't want to do that. But this is very much something that's going to be released publicly free. The workshops are going to be free. I think I have funding streams to fund this the proper way through nonprofits who care about this kind of information and this kind of curriculum out there. So it will be free. It's not going to be a pay curricula. I do not like pay curricula either. Like as a teacher, like whenever I see pay curriculum, like just like, especially in New York City, just make your own. Like it's New York City. We spend like $5 billion on education. We can just make our own curricula and give it out free to everyone. I don't know why that doesn't happen more. We have no reason to be buying curricula. So no, it will be Creative Commons licensed and free to use. Gotcha. Okay, so the question was, and I think this is our last question that we have time for, was even though I sort of have an issue with making this a jobs program, although I explicitly, it's a very paradoxical because I'm also like, I want to create more jobs in the privacy and public interest technology for this. But yes, how do we address tech jobs that aren't writing code? So that's very much covered in the sort of public interest civic tech. I also come from a working class background. I was soldering like my Saturn to like mod it when I was in high school. And I only got into tech by accident. My dad was a fisherman and my mom worked at Burger King. And I just happened to go to a very good school that had computer science classes. And so I learned computer science and tricked my way through getting a degree in computer science. And I left professional software development, normal software development, probably about 9 years ago. And so I'm very interested in the jobs that aren't coding too, because I used to have a coding job and I want to teach people about the other jobs out there. I think that's something I'll have to consider. That's not really something that I've explicitly called out in here about the non-coding jobs. It's very much not focused on coding. And I think that I sort of touched on that earlier, that I think the reason why like infrastructure isn't talked about is because it's not like the cool tech job. You're not like making games or whatever. And like there's not a lot out there around like running the wires and building the infrastructure and setting up the servers and stuff like that. So that's something I'll have to think about. I have some ideas on like sysadmin games and stuff like that. That is like generations away from what I'm prepared to do now. But I will think about that. All right. So you can email me. Also, I have a QR code here if you want to go to that link or scan a QR code. That takes you to a form that you can fill out to get more information on this. Or you can just email me if you have my email from the other thing, and I will add you to the list. Thank you for listening.